News Talk 1340 KROC AM. Good morning. I'm Andy Brownell, Rochester Today on a beautiful Tuesday morning with Tom Ostrom. Good to see you again, Tom.
You
seems
too.
Like forever since we've done a show together.
You too, Andrew.
Yeah, had to take some time off for some mechanical, I don't know what you want to, logistics, let's put it that way.
Oh, good. There, that's the word.
So it's good to be back. Good to see you, Tom. What would you like to start with today, since we're going to dive right into things?
Well, four interesting political stories on the national scene, and then, of course, we'll probably spend the rest of the hour on President Obama's decision to attack ISIS in Syria. Monumental decision, lots to talk about. But a couple of national items. Political correctness. The Ninth Circuit Court in California denied the appeal of students who were punished at their high school for wearing an American flag on their T-shirts. And this is on Constitution Day, the U.S. Court of Appeals. There are liberals on that court, except for a dissenter judge. They declined to hear the appeal from the students who were punished by their California high school for wearing an American flag on their shirt on Cinco de Mayo Day, because it might incite Hispanic students to violence. It might incite them. And the court said that there's been trouble at that school, and the school administrators just acted wisely. That is just ridiculous. And the dissenting judge, whose name is O'Scanlan, wrote, "This panel condones the suppression of students' speech for one reason, that other students might react violently against them. So thugs prevail, and this contravenes the fundamental issues of First Amendment principles. The freedom of speech guaranteed by our Constitution protects unpopular speech, unpopular symbols, and it's a foundation of our Constitution and of our freedom. By threatening violence against those with whom you disagree, you enlist the power of the state to silence them. This is outrageous, and it is not the law, and it's a sad day for government." And it is. It's catering to the thugs. Plus, people who live in this country don't like the American flag, and some of them might be illegal, find it outrageous. But that's that liberal Ninth Circuit California court, and they got one brave judge on there.
It's such... It's insane in so many different ways. That judge, the dissenter, said it well.
Yeah.
And it gave a great summation of why this decision is completely wrong. And at the other level is, if you go to the school district level and you look at a situation where you obviously have a boiling pot in your school where you have some tensions between two different groups of students. And if it's going to be displaying an American flag on Cinco de Mayo is going to set it off, then I think you know where your problem lies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you need to deal with the students who are causing the problem, not those who are necessarily displaying the American flag. You explain to the other group that it is not offensive for somebody to display an American flag on any given day of the year while you are in the United States. If your sensibilities are offended by that, you need to adjust your sensibilities at this point.
That's right. And the Cinco de Mayo celebration probably has a symbol there flying in the wind. But
it's also more of an American celebration than it is a Mexican celebration.
Well, that's
in the
true,
first
too.
Place.
And, yeah, and its origins are obscure. But political correctness.
Yeah, that's.
And then we got more of it, too. The Department of Justice, that Eric Holder, he's part of this most transparent administration in history. In another area where he is, I think, going against the laws of the land. They're down there in Ferguson, was it Missouri? And the Department of Justice is holding public meetings to get to the bottom of the police and the unarmed teenager that allegedly attacked a police officer. But the Department of Justice and Eric Holder, they're down there, and they're shutting out the media. Now, you'd think the media would be upset by that. President Obama does that, too, shuts out the media. Eric Holder says that this has to be an investigation that is private. And if the media is present or city officials complain, they're subject to fines and imprisonment. Sounds like a dictatorship. They don't want the public to hear these hearings because they're probably going to hear things that go against the Eric Holder's preferred outcome of this incident.
Okay, but this case, I'm actually going to defend him on this case, and you and I are not going to agree, because if you are conducting an investigation, by having the findings of an investigation made public before the investigation is completed, it can mess with your investigation.
I can see that if it's a grand jury, but these are town hall meetings.
I get that
open
part of
to
it
the
too.
Public.
And I,
if it were closed for when, what you said, I would agree.
No, I get your point as well. Why bill it as, hey, come all, come on down and air your grievances? Because that's what it sounds as if that the Justice Department is billing these events as,
yeah,
rather than a formal investigation. So you're right. If you're going to do it that way, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Secrecy sometime is essential as part of investigative processes too.
But I would highly doubt that. I think you might have an issue in that town as far as relations between law enforcement and the citizenry, and it's probably more of a local issue than it is one that needs the feds' attention, and it's probably something that local leadership is going to have to resolve rather than come in from the Obama administration and find a way to have a method for the people who live in that town to have their grievances about law enforcement addressed, and the other way around, that they can find some level of communication that can, can settle things down.
Yes, but it's chilling to me, the administration, they've told Border Patrol agents they can't talk to the press. They can't go and interview children. It seems the media would clamp. If George Bush had clamped down on the media, you'd be hearing about it. But the Justice Department made it clear, and a city official talked to the reporter for this article, and he didn't want to be quoted, but he said, they told us if we make public in any manner information gathered here, we're subject to misdemeanor charges and fines up to $1,000 and a year in jail. I don't know what
law
they put that under.
Good luck with
that.
But
anyway, I found it interesting.
It is interesting. But the other part of it, we've talked about this before. I think what you're seeing down there is a political play, that this administration is pushing this as part of their agenda, and I don't know if it actually has any chance of resolving any of the real issues that need to be resolved in that community. But it sure could play out well for them at the polls.
Oh, sure. And if it's not done fairly and thoroughly, it'll exacerbate continued tensions.
Because what are you going to do? You're going to indict or fire the entire police department in Ferguson, Missouri? Is that the end roll here? You're going to label the entire police department a racist, corrupt organization?
Yeah.
Is that the end result here?
I think that's what they want to do.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, they're going to get the police on civil rights charges, I think, some of them, on past incidents. We'll see.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to prove. I mean, if you have a crime taking place and you have law enforcement responding to a crime and something happens, to label that as a civil rights violation is going to be a tough one to make that stick.
That's right.
And I'm not saying, I'm not saying that the Ferguson Police Department was not involved in abuses, because I'm not ready to say that at all. That may very well be the case. But to go and try to make it a systemic issue might be, you could have individual commanders or individual officers who are acting out. I just have a hard time believing that you're going to label an entire police department a corrupt, racist organization.
Well, I think it's Eric Holder trying to gin up the black vote for 2014, because even the American blacks, I'm gonna compliment Obama. I'm on his case on all this stuff. I think in that when we get to foreign affairs, I'm going to have to say a few nice words about his decision, But I think it's fine. It's everything's politics with that administration, and they accuse anyone that criticizes them of being political.
Right.
So
we're going to do a quick phone call, but then we have to take a break before we cover some more stuff, Tom. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey.
I think you're right about the appreciate your comments on the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. What are you going to do? The town has shifted demographically from a predominantly white to a large population of black, and you've got professionals who were hired some time ago, and you really can't say, well, I'm sorry, but your job has to go away because the makeup of the town has changed, so some of you guys have to leave. That would not be the way to do it. I think that would be certainly a discrimination problem for sure. And I think you're also right about it being strictly a political ploy. if this was not just prior to the midterms, I don't think you'd be hearing anything at all like this. So that's my take on that. One other comment I'd like to make, and shifting completely away from Ferguson, sending 3,000 U.S. military troops to the Ebola belt, and they're not medically trained. They have no special equipment. They'll probably be given hazmat suits and all that kind of stuff, but I think we're really risking a lot of people for very little positive. And what I mean by that is you see that the customs of burial and treating and handling the dead there are largely to the spread of Ebola. And when Red Cross and UN people have tried to intervene, some have been killed. They've all been attacked. Not everybody, but each group has been attacked. I see this as a kind of the reverse of the traditional win-win. It's kind of a lose-lose, and I'd like your comments on that.
Well, do you have an opinion, Andy? I do.
Okay, but we got to take a break. And yeah. We'll get back to it. Is that all right?
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I'm going to get way behind schedule here. Yeah, we can talk about the Ebola break. Okay. 63 degrees downtown Rochester. Roscoe's Root Beer. What a beautiful day today to go down to Roscoe's. Oh, my goodness. You got a stretch of days here to take advantage of the Root Beer Stand on 4th Street Southeast before that nasty weather arrives at some point in the future, hopefully down the road a ways. And the fish fry ongoing, the delicious Icelandic cod, batter fried with the JoJo potatoes or the fries. Get down there while it lasts, because it is a limited time thing, that fish fry at Roscoe's on 4th Street.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Danny, our crack salesman who deals with Steve and Barbara very pleasantly, and he said, boy, the good weather has really been good for Roscoe's. And I see that as Mary and I are out about town. The cars pack that driveway downtown here, the A&W stand, and up north, it's North Shopko. Shopko North, it's all crowded, and people happily going after the coleslaw and the garlic toast and those fish and chips downtown. And you're covered for rainy weather in both places, really. So go and enjoy the summer and Roscoe's barbecue ribs and wonderful sides.
That's Roscoe's Root Beer and Ribs, two locations. Of course, the Root Beer Stand at 4th Street Southeast and the North location, which is right up by Shopko North and is open all year round. News Talk 1340, KROC AM, 63 downtown. Should be a nice day with a high in the low 70s today. I'm Andy Brownell with Tom Ostrom on Rochester Today. 282-1234 is the number. We went into the break, and our caller was asking about the U.S. response to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. And, yeah, if you were one of those soldiers who got the short straw and had that assignment, I would not be a happy camper. Scary situation in that part of the world, getting scarier by the day. And also, he did point out that these UN teams that have gone in there and tried to sanitarily dispose of the Ebola victims, in some cases, Sierra Leone and Liberia and some other places have actually been attacked by villagers. And part of that is because the rumor mill running rampant in that part of the world, there's some crazy stuff going through the grapevine about that. The outsiders, these scientists and these, the people wearing the safety suits are somehow causing the Ebola outbreak. And that is contributing to the crisis that is happening in that part of the world. So, yeah, I also questioned that when I saw that, when the president did order that. But
yes.
At the same time, a lack of an international response could have grave ramifications for the rest of the world as well. I don't know if his response was the correct one, but my understanding is most of their job will be erecting the hospitals.
In a secure manner, an isolated manner. And then a lot of the Army troops are trained medics. They're trained. There's Army physicians and medical technicians. But I know, I'm afraid of it too. And indigenous health workers from those countries have been attacked too. So but something has to be done, because that disease can be spread in various ways. And airlines have been told that even in the air, you could acquire it. So it's a serious business.
Well, you could get in the fabric of the seats.
Yeah.
Literally, you could have the germs transferred from the skin of a person onto the seat of an airliner. Oh. And I don't have no idea how long it could last in the airliner. And it is becoming apparent that the governments in these countries are incapable of dealing with this.
Their infrastructure is, and their and rural ignorance, these peasant villagers that don't know, don't understand it. Although I'd be frightened to death and not understand it either.
I think at some point, and I know there's a lot of people who would criticize this point of view, and I'm not sure that we're at the level that it's needed at this point. But down the road, I could see a situation where you have an international quarantine, and I think that we're maybe months away from that occurring, that there will not be international travel from those parts of the world.
Airlines. Who wants to go there?
We could do another call, Tom.
Go ahead.
Before we do the break, and then we can get into we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Yeah, I heard the last talker talk about sending our troops and not being trained.
Yeah.
All of our troops are trained with for VX nerve gas. That's about 100 times more dangerous than Ebola. The Ebola is body fluids only. That's like spit, urine, whatever.
Gut,
skin is not part of the thing.
Sweat.
If the Ebola outbreak persists, it can change over to a airborne virus, possibly. So if we don't fix it now, the whole world's going to pay for it in the long run.
No, I agree. I agree that it requires an international response, and what's happening over there right now is not adequate at all.
Right. And international, if we don't do it, we better do it, because it could bite us in the butt just as bad as anything else.
But my understanding as well, it's not just blood and saliva, because skin contact can be enough.
Oh, sure. That's how physicians have gotten it and healthcare workers have gotten it. I think we're going to have a quarantine. And some of the people that have been confined to their homes aren't staying there. They're going out into the streets anyway. I can see that, like, the Walking Dead, if people who are quarantined don't obey the regulations and start walking. One Ebola person bit somebody, too, on purpose. What are they going to do when these people rebel, riot, and don't do what they're supposed to? We're going to grab them, going to shoot them, going to confine them? Yeah, something has to be done, but it's awfully dangerous.
It's not there yet, but this is the nightmare scenario that infectious disease folks have been talking about for years.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else?
Nope. Yeah, I think you got it, but
okay.
Thank you.
The call. I got to put the stop sign on, Tom. This hour is, you know what's happening to us, Tom? This hour, we haven't spent time together, and this hour's going by way too fast.
You get
crazy.
Me all revved up.
I know.
I'm going to drink my coffee.
Okay, we're going to take our break, but you can't drink your coffee. Well, I guess you can, because it is from Carol's Cup and Carol's Corn in the subway level of the Taylor Grand Hotel, and I guess that's about as blatant a plug as we can get right there.
Yeah.
And it's not just the popcorn, folks. They have delicious coffee as well, as Tom will tell you about right now.
I wish you were the Seattle best coffee. You go in there and work those Turins or whatever you call them. The coffee's in, pump it up, and go pay for it and hit the road and get the popcorn and get the confectionaries and sundries and have fun with their wonderful staff. But it's the popcorn that makes Carol's Corn nationally known. People come from all over. They love the corn. They put it in tins. They mail it home. They bring it to local offices. And, of course, you got the water, juice, milk, energy drinks, breakfast, munchies. Just go in there and have fun.
That's Carol's Cup, Carol's Corn, subway level, Kaler Grand Hotel, and Carol's Cup with the frozen yogurt at Apache Mall. News Talk 1340 KROC AM. Good morning. I'm Andy Brownell, along with my friend Tom Ostrom. On a Tuesday morning, 64 downtown, and we have a telephone bank here. The number is 282-1234 if you'd like to join the conversation. And, Thomas, we've had a caller on hold through the break. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Hi. One of the things that I have been struck with living in Rochester is the ability of the media to be sure you only hear certain parts of things. Whenever I approach the local Post Bulletin, that everything is local. I've tried to explain to them that a lot of national things wend their way down to become very local from nationally. What I'm going to mention today is true. You should, if you don't believe me, look it up. I should preface by saying I have read the entire health care bill, which we have conveniently gotten away from with the elections. The point is this. In the health care bill, it is written out and planned that over the next 10 years, $45 billion will be taken from Medicare and Medicare Advantage and moved directly into Obamacare.
Yes, I had actually read that.
Yes, at the end of 10 years, therefore, oh, and by the way, I hate to be cynical, but it's true. The Democrats were able to move this year's vote until, of course, after the election, so it wouldn't elect or it wouldn't affect their elections and their results, and of course, no one would know. Well, here I am. So they're going to do it this year, and they're going to do it for 10 years. Now, that's $450 billion, which is almost one-half trillion dollars. I hate to use the word stolen or snuck away from and put into Obamacare. Now, in addition to that, as you well know, during the next, it's already started in the past year or so, during the next number of years, millions, literally millions of people are going to become 65 and go on Medicare. But you have a huge burden added to Medicare of new people, as well as trying to care for those of your audience who are already on Medicare. Obviously, there won't be enough funds.
No.
And what will happen is there will be a reduction in the amount of services provided, allowed. And another time I'll tell you about a board that will be restricting those services.
Sure. We've actually, Tim Penny is on a fairly regular basis, a former congressman, and he and I have talked about these issues in depth a few times, and especially the Medicare funding part of this. And he'll also point out that the decisions that have been made by the Obama administration unilaterally to provide exemptions to some of the mandates of Obamacare will have a significant impact on the revenue side, and that will further exacerbate the situation that you're talking about.
That is correct. And I guess I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Because I've read it. And not only that, but it's I don't understand. I think it's because people in the area have no clue. But basically, everybody is goody-goody-goody. Not everybody, but a lot of people are. And they are having this foisted upon them because they've gotten some kind of tax back from the government. They didn't get any. The taxes they got back were part of the increase of $2 billion taxes.
Right.
They were taxed. So that $500 million came back to them only because the Republicans demanded it. Some people actually wrote it that they wanted to keep the remaining $500 million in case of, quote, an emergency.
Well, you've done a good job prior to the elections here. We've got to take a break, though, okay?
Yeah. Thank you
for
the information.
You're very welcome. Have a nice day.
You as well.
The truth. Remember Jack Webb, just the truth.
Just okay. Yeah. I like your reference. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
All right, Thomas, we've got a couple items we want to cover quickly here, as quickly as possible.
We do. The first Lois Lerner gave
An
interview to Politico, and she didn't do anything wrong, and she's proud of her work. Her house is under guard because she's been threatened. She can't get jobs anywhere, but she's got a $100,000 a year pension. But she's not sorry a bit. She didn't do anything wrong. She's proud of what she did.
I actually read the most of that, and I didn't see the interview, but it was with Politico, and she tactfully avoided any discussion of any of the real issues in the case because, of course, her legal troubles. So,
that's right.
And so it was fairly a one-sided interview.
That was fawning.
She was asked the questions. She was asked the questions but declined to answer.
That's right. And then the lost email messages and everything else. So that's that. And then one more thing, a Benghazi bombshell. the Clinton State Department official, an honorable military officer and bureaucrat, is a whistleblower about Benghazi, so he's going to get in trouble. In fact, he already was laid off, and then he found out, and his name is, he's a former state deputy, deputy assistant secretary. His name is Raymond Maxwell. He's an African-American. If Republicans had done this to him, they'd be called racist. He spoke out about Benghazi, and he spoke out about the Clinton State Department and her minions over the weekend, shredding documents about Benghazi that made Hillary look bad. He walked into that, and one of his staffers, he was surprised, was there doing it, and she said, "This isn't about you, Ray. It's about 2016
right.
in protecting Hillary." That's a bombshell. He's courageously speaking out. He's retired now, so he can. But we'll see what happens to him. So anyway, those are the national news items before we get to the Syrian bombing.
It is interesting that the Benghazi thing won't go away. And I know part of it is the timing of the hearings and the schedule that was set up by the Republicans in the House in order to put this back into the news as we head towards the election cycle. But at the same time, it's got to be just a thorn in Hillary's side as she prepares for 2016 that this darn thing is not fading away. In fact, in some cases, there are people who were skeptical of the motives of those who were talking about this, who are starting to go, well, wait a minute here, especially in the events that we're going to talk about after the break, dealing with ISIS and the relation between what happened in Libya and the choices made by the Obama administration in Libya.
And Iraq.
With the issues that we're facing today with this ISIS group. We're going to take a quick break, Thomas, and don't go away because Victoria's Restaurante and Wine Bar in downtown Rochester wants you to know that we're heading into this busy season. We get past the summer season and everybody's got stuff coming up. You've got workplace retreats coming up. You've got, because the vacations are over with, you've got holiday season coming up. You've got, you name it, whatever event you have, they can help you cater it. They've got the pasta bar. They've got the expertise. They can guide you through the process, and you will enjoy the Victorious Catering.
Oh, the menu selections are wonderful. Yeah, the pasta bar style and the options and the mouthwatering entrees, fresh garden salads and homemade dressings and the baked rolls. The menu of pasta delights of chicken and pork and beef and the salads, the appetizer platters, the desserts. And they've got one of the finest wine bars in the city and wonderful staff that can help you plan anything. And if you don't need any activities catered, go down there and choose the menu and sit outside while you can and enjoy it.
And enjoy Victoria's Restaurante and Wine Bar. They're on First Avenue Southwest in downtown Rochester. It's 10 minutes away from 11 o'clock. I'm Andy Brownell with Tom Ostrom. And you're listening to Rochester Today. Of course, a reminder that a replay of this program will be available later today on KROCAM.com. And be sure to go to the website and get all the latest news and sports and weather. It's all right there, easy to find, and very up-to-date, 24/7 updates on the KROCAM.com. And be sure to like us on Facebook as well. Find us on Facebook and put a like there, and it'll be delivered right on your news feed, all the latest news and sports, right to your phone or wherever else you have your Facebook gizmo wired up. All right. We got a few minutes left. Hopefully we can do this justice because this is a major development. Yesterday, the United States caught a number of people by surprise with the quickness of the military action in Syria against ISIS forces, the Islamic State group. Based on what the president had said and military advisors, it was, hey, this might be coming in a month or two. And they did it in, what, a week and a half after the announcement that it probably would be happening. And at this point, I think it's probably one of the more effective of the limited options that the United States has in dealing with this. Because if you don't bring the fight to where their headquarters is, your chances of really crimping the activities of ISIS are not good at all. Whether or not this will succeed in the long run, just airstrikes is also up in the air and a big question mark attached to that. But I do appreciate the quickness of it because it likely caught the ISIS group by surprise a little bit as well, that they were able to put together such a formidable attack in such a quick time frame. There we go.
Oh, yes. You've got U.S. Navy carrier jets. You've got U.S. Air Force operating, sending missiles, all of them sending ordnance into Syria, into the ISIS camps. Now, we're attacking Syria, and to crush ISIS is to help the ruler there, Assad. Our government doesn't want help from Syria. But if we don't get troops on the ground, we might be asking help from Syria and others later, because that's an essential part of victory. And all the generals have told Obama that. But I was surprised, too. Obama kind of seemed lethargic or I don't have a plan or anything else. But he went down to Florida to CENTCOM. He talked to his generals. He didn't listen to his generals in Iraq. He didn't listen other times, but he listened this time to the generals and admirals. And he planned this attack, and he gave them the permission to carry it out. And it's a surprise, and it's going to be devastating. And we credit Obama with taking action. He seemed lethargic about the issue before. It's courageous. It's not without problems. You got the Russians and the Iranians wondering, will we be partnering with Iran if we don't have troops on the ground of our own? But what surprised me, and I'll have to credit President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry, they say they've got Arab allies, Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and Jordan and Bahrain. Turkey staying out of it for various reasons. Britain is not getting involved with aircraft. I think France did some air attacks in Iraq. Egypt hasn't done anything yet. Britain and France have to be careful, and so does Turkey. They got a lot of Islamist extremists in their country. But it was a strike. It was a surprise. And whether ISIS likes it or not, or wants it, or how they react to it overseas or even in the United States, it had to be done. Now, arming the Syrian rebels is a problem for me. You don't know who they are. They were doctors and pharmacists, we heard before, and now we need them. Saudi Arabia says, bring them to Saudi Arabia. We'll train them. But that's going to take a year. I don't know how those freedom fighters... By the way, some of those Syrian rebels have already made a peace pact with ISIS. We won't attack you if you don't attack us. I mean, it's so complicated. I don't know how they are going to do anything, however they're trained for however long it takes. But it's a start, and it's a shock, and it was a surprise, and it's a necessary and good idea that the president did. He campaigned to stay out of wars, to bring people home. He's blamed for not acting in Iraq, leaving a residual force there. Not listening to his generals, but the point is, he did it. He doesn't want to. He's got to worry about his left wing base. But as commander in chief and responsibility of protecting America, he did it. And Senator Kerry evidently has a coalition. We'll see how long it lasts or what they do. And it's a surprise, and it's hopefully effective.
Yeah, it caught me a bit by surprise as well. And the one thing, being commander-in-chief, and this is the reason he's getting so many gray hairs and so quickly, is that the job has got to be, in this particular part of the job, has got to just be absolutely horrible. There's really no real good option here. And we do have our technological advantage, especially in the air. And they wielded that probably, hopefully, effectively. It's going to take a while to figure out how much of an impact that this had. But it will change ISIS tactics as well. And as his own generals have pointed out, that they'll be pretty quick to adapt and move, blend in with civilian populations, which will make any future mass airstrikes a lot more horrific on the part of the United States because of the... I hate to use the term collateral damage. It means a whole bunch of innocents. A whole bunch of innocents die is what it
means.
That's
right. And the extremists will take advantage of that, just like Hamas doesn't show pictures. Exactly. Harry Reid doesn't want to vote. Senator Reid, Senate Majority Leader, he doesn't want to vote. Possible troubles because both political parties are split on these things. And we'll see what happens there. And they don't want to vote on it. And maybe before the election have split votes from both parties. But Congress did give President Obama the funding he needs for the initial part of this.
The one thing I'm going to fault Obama with on this discussion that's taken place over the last week and a half, since he gave the speech to the American people that one Wednesday evening, is that when you had Dempsey and other military advisors, when they were grilled by members of Congress about boots on the ground, and they pointed out, well, they hedged a little bit. Because there are some reasonable situations where you're going to have to say, we're going to have to put boots on the ground. If we have an F-16 that's shot down, we're going to have to get that person out. And the only way you're going to get that person out is boots on the ground. You're going to bring a chopper in there, and you're going to do a whole bunch of other things, but you're going to provide security while you're doing this. So you can't absolutely rule it out. You also can't absolutely rule out the use of special ops guys to go in there and provide targeting. If you want to avoid collateral damage, that's how you're going to do it. You're going to go in and use our technology to provide precise, confirmed by human being targeting of these bad guys. And that's going to require limited boots on the ground. But then you had the president almost immediately say, no way.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
And I thought, what are you doing? I mean, I understand where he's getting hammered by his left base.
Yeah.
But this is where that whole leadership comes into play.
That's
the leadership role. You stand up and you say, you know, this is something we want to avoid. We don't have any intention of sending 10,000 troops in. We don't have any intention of sending an entire division over there. But there are situations that might require a ground presence in a limited fashion, and I'm not going to rule that out.
And we've got over 1,000 troops there now, and they're going to be embedded with Iraqis, and that means they can be attacked and be captured. So we're not through with this escalation yet.
No. And the other part about this. And this is when I hear, you also hear the double speak from this administration as well. You have one side say, these guys are as dangerous can be, and we better watch out and deal with this now because this is something that's going to have to be addressed now, or it's going to be really, really hard to address it. It's going to be worse, let's put it that way.
And will there be lone wolves in this country that go to the ISIS cause?
And then on the other side, you have somebody in the administration downplaying the risk that this group poses and the dangers it poses. And so you're sending all these conflicting messages out, not only to our enemy, but also to the American populace, because then you have people going, then why are we even bothering with this? And, yeah, in that part of it, they have not handled this well at all. Thomas, we're almost out of time.
Okay.
So I'm going to be here Friday, and you're going to be here on Friday, so things are going to be normal for a little bit here. And tomorrow, Tracy McRae will be in with myself for Rochester Today, along with Mike Doherty from the Minnesota Department of Transportation, which is always an interesting topic because we're always using the roads. That's tomorrow on Rochester Today. It is 11 o'clock.